Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with Reality Check Radio, Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And as we are prone to do many times, is we love to get stories from rural New Zealand out into our listeners' ears. And this morning we're going to have a gentleman who's was born in Manawatu, saw the light and shifted to the south after a lot of education in the North Island at Palmerston North Boys High School, Smedley Ag Station. I think that's in Hawke's Bay. And he trained a bit further and got his Dip Ag in Lincoln. Found his wife, Amy, at Lincoln, and then after a few years managing farms, went into one of the largest businesses in rural New Zealand, a farming business, and that is Mount Linton in Western Southland, where he was the genetics manager, sheep genetics manager. And of course, Mount Linton had a flock of around 55,000 sheep. So Hamish Belsky is his name, and we're grateful to have him on. He's now farming in South Otago in an equity partnership. He's big in systems. He's big in thinking things through. And we've been trying to get him on RCR Greenwashed for some time. And so today we've scored him. And Hamish, welcome to our show. You are a deep thinking man. I've read a lot of your output. What is it that really drives you to this state of sort of wanting to be organized and not perfect? You know, no one's perfect, but almost, you know, you're so rigorous on your thought processes and how you deliver it. What drives you to be like that? What is it that's really spun your wheels in the farming sense, especially with stock genetics?
Thanks for having me, Don and Jaspreet. It's just a pleasure to be here. What drives me? I don't know. I've just got a drive. You can't explain it, I guess, just to be better. And as I say to Amy often, it's like everything's a competition. It's either between someone else or something else or myself. It's to me, life's a game, and you just want to get better, learn more. I mean, learning is so much fun, and I just love discussion and debate, and solving problems, solving real problems. And I hate wasting time on things that will have no outcomes that are useful. I don't know, you know, it's just, and just don't go along with what everybody is saying or doing, because groupthink and following narratives is just it's so easy to get caught up in. And when you really question things, you go back to that fairy tale of the emperor has no clothes, and it's one of, I read it to our kids. It's like that's one of the most well written stories that everyone should understand. And so yeah, it's just a I don't know, a hunger to improve and do better. And I'll tell you what, when you say talk about perfection, I mean, we've been through four droughts and dries in the last 4 years, and out of the last 10, I think we've had seven or so. It's just like ridiculous. And you look out at the farm and you're short of feed, and you just feel like what a complete mess that we've got ourselves into, because, you know, I've gone back shearing reasonably full time, and Amy's back wool handling, and you know, we're going to make this year, hopefully have a profit. But along the way, you spend the least amount of money as you can, because you can't afford to spend a whole lot of money. And then you get through, and there's damage or consequences for not spending that money. So, you know, and so you beat yourself up, but in the end I'm like, no, you do what you can at the time, and we understand what we have to do to get through from here, and just don't spend your time dwelling on what you could have done. But yeah, that's, yeah, anyway, there you go.
But you've got a farming system that you've deployed on your farm. You're no doubt modifying it all the time. But your passion really seems to have been, and when I read back through, is sheep genetics and breeding for improved animals. And that's what farmers have done, especially since subsidies were removed in 1985, yeah, production subsidies. What I've noted in the sheep industry, and yeah, I did 25 or 30 years of it, you just were looking for improvement annually. And most of that was due to the increased cost structures that were coming at you. It wasn't because you wanted to put it in your bottom. Well, you did want to put it on your in your pocket, but you couldn't because there were so many new costs always coming at us. And so the people that mine the farmers, basically, they are harvesting your genetic improvement probably more than you are, actually. But we still do it because we actually value New Zealand and the basically the New Zealand economy. But you're saying, by the sound of it, that this last year has been one of the toughest, if not the toughest, and it sounds like it is, speaking to other farmers, the toughest since the mid-80s. And you wonder, you must question what it's all for, other than what I've just said, which is we do it because we like it and we value being part of New Zealand. But it's difficult, isn't it?
I mean, at the end of the day, we do it because we love it. That you do it, as you say, to almost just to stand still. And this year, is sheep farmers are going backwards. There's no two ways about it. But regardless of that, it's sort of quite addicting, the whole sheep genetics thing, because you see the progress and you see where you've gone wrong and you correct. And because we've got a breeding system, which is SIL, SIL, that the whole thing's built on, it works so well. Have so much faith, you know, you've so much faith in it, so it means your efforts rewarded. Because if you're doing something in life but it's a farce or it's not well set up, then your effort is in vain. And so I just want to make that point. Our industry is actually set up a really awesome system, and they continue to do so. And when you see your progress and know it's real, it's not a construct or some theory, that's so rewarding. And so, but then when it comes back to the, do we do it for the money? Well, this is my point. It's so hard to make progress in farming that when something comes along that actually reduces that progress for some sort of for a political trade, that it's just insanity. And we just don't not stand for that and push back on it. And thankfully, you know, the majority of farmers who actually use these genetics agree, but that's not what you'd think.
Yeah, okay. So just for clarity, SIL is Sheep Improvement Limited, for our listeners' benefit. And it's been going for, I'm guessing, about 40 plus years now. And
it was started in 1999 at kickoff.
Right. And in that system, there's traits that are assigned breeding values, and that's how you can expose your genetic improvement. Look, with that sort of very basic explanation, you've been writing some pretty good stories from where Jasbreed and I sit. Anyway, our show has constantly been trying to highlight the methane madness in New Zealand that's now taken hundreds of millions of dollars out of people's pockets, taxpayers and farmers, trying to find this magic bullet for methane reduction, one of which is supposedly breeding this new sheep that's going to new ram, the new ovine species that's going to have much reduced methane output, but it's going to retain its meat and milk, milking and, meat and wool production capacity. And you seem to have some issues with that, Hamish. Can you explain what they are?
Well, first of all, there's only like a 12% difference between the high and the low. So 6% high methane, 6% low methane. Do you understand what I'm saying there? There's not a huge range. And In the end, do people really believe that by getting lower methane sheep on our pastures, do people really believe that it's going to change the climate or improve the climate or do anything? And no one really believes that. But when the money comes your way, then it's convenient to believe that and tell everybody else that it's got to be done. And there is more variation on our farms of methane output just from seasons. So when you have high quality pastures, you have less methane because the microbes in the gut have less work to do to break down the fiber. And in the winter or the autumn, if we have a really growthy spring and we've got a lot of pastures to what clean up or to reset in a vegetative state, then the methane output's huge. And so the difference in genetics is so small compared to our management and how we run our farms. To me, chasing rainbows just sums up the whole thing. The rainbow looks lovely. You can never get there. And even if you do get there, what there's nothing to check.
No pot of gold. And
Yeah.
so
I don't know. It's just so it's so crazy. I can't even explain how it does my head in about the madness of it. And people say, "Oh, well, you're not a climate scientist." I'm like, I don't need to be a climate scientist. I understand how the methane cycle works. I understand that it's driven by solar energy. I understand that it's breaks down after a decade and then goes back into water vapor and carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide just gets drawn back down through the plants. And it's just this wonderful cycle that, when you tick all the boxes, are livestock sustainable? Of course they are. They've been around for millennia. Are they biodegradable? Absolutely. Are they renewable? Absolutely. And they convert what we can't into superfood. I mean, if a corporation developed a machine like that, they would be trillionaires and have the biggest patent apart from finding oil ever. So when you look at solar energy, doesn't tick any of those boxes except gives us energy from the sun, but you then have to rebuild it. You then have to bury this stuff. You then have to, it's an endless game of propaganda.
It
And
is.
I just, when the Climate Change Commission came to Gore, I said, why do you call it renewables? Why do you call that renewables, yet livestock are somehow pollutants? You know, it's all in the language. Language is everything. And anything I've learned in the last 4 years, I just had no appreciation of what language, the power of language. And so that's what it comes down to. And I'm just sit there calling it out, going, nah, we're wasting our time, we're wasting our money. There are major issues in the sheep industry of parasite resistance. And now we've got shedding sheep. So there's a whole nother trait that farmers are interested in. You've got fly strike, which is becoming with the Aussie green fly. So we want, chemical resistance is happening all the time. So there are major issues. And then we want better growth in our sheep. Then we want better eating quality because if the people are going to buy our lamb, we want them to have a nice experience. And so then we've got to worry about that. Then we've got to worry about how many lambs we have. Oh, then there's animal welfare about how many lambs we lose. So survival is such a major part of what we do. And then it's an endless amount of traits that's exhausting talking about it, let alone going out there and doing it. And then you add in a trait that's purely political. So when they come out with Hei Waka Ikanoa and saying, and the chairman of Beef and Lamb and the CEO of Beef and Lamb stared us in the face saying, if we don't get Hei Waka Ikanoa over the ground, over the line, we're in the ETS. And that's in legislation. And if National get in, they say they're not going to change it. And so it was this fear-driven campaign by our own farmers trying to convince us that this was a good idea. And then National get in And the Hiwaka Ikanoa is dead, and we're out of ETS. I'm just like, you cannot make this stuff up. So when people say you're wasting your time on things you can't control, I say garbage. These are the sorts of things that if no one stands up for, they will railroad it through, and it is pure politics, nothing to do with science. And so
Yeah.
that's why I'm not.
Now, for the benefit of some of our listeners who are not into farming 100%, I'll re rattle off some figures. We went from a national stock, sheep stock, of close to 70 million in the 80s peak, and we are down to 22, 23 million now. Remember reading about New Zealand then, 26, 27 sheep to a person, down to 6 to a person now. Yet our exports haven't dropped by nearly the same quantum. We managed the competitiveness there. There's also this fact about when you mentioned, Hamish, there's a whole list of other traits we could be breeding a sheep for, or we still have to, fine-tune that. We are now breeding for methane. We began this as a world first program in 2019. Again, I don't know what it is with New Zealand and our obsession for world first, but we seem to aim for world first in everything. And we have decided that 4 millionth of a degree of warming caused by methane of ruminants belonging to New Zealand is important enough to actually, at this point, this outfit called Agri Zero has spent well over $500 million. So I know you mentioned, and I hate to be a wet blanket, Hamish, you mentioned that Nationals come in, ETS is gone, Hiwaka Ikanoa is gone, but these guys are still gunning for it. And there is absolutely, it seems to me, that democracy and legislation and policymaking has been outsourced to these bodies that don't really represent us. I don't know where they spring up from. And all the bodies that we fund, farming advocacy bodies, they join hands with an external group. And hey, presto, suddenly you are being railroaded into doing this 4 millionth of a degree. How do you even quantify that? It's ridiculous.
Again, I don't even, the measurements are irrelevant. I mean, nobody actually knows that's going to happen. And I'm so over science in quotation marks, where, I listened to Jamie McFadden, and he said that, NIWA and ECAN and the braided river science project of intensity on those braided rivers, that he called them out, and they were completely wrong. They were so wrong. They made that stuff up. And so NIWA, when it comes out with its what big storms and stuff in the last century, whatever, omitted a whole lot of stuff. When we go through COVID, and suddenly the jab was safe and effective, and I'm looking back going, which part was safe and which part was effective? Because you can have all the science trials and data you like, but reality is reality. And when I talk to friends and family, like, do you know anyone who died of COVID? It's like, no, I don't know anyone who died of COVID, and I don't know anyone who knows anyone who died of COVID. But then I have countless people who have no people who were affected by the jab in really bad ways. And then I'm like, but we were meant to save granny by taking it. And I'm like, but how does that happen? Because if I catch it and spread it. So
Political science.
all these things that were said weren't reality. And so I've lost confidence in science and scientists. That's not all scientists, but the experts. And so when they turn around and tell us we have to do all the stuff to lower the methane on what is already a sustainable and, like I said, all those other traits, biodegradable, renewable animal, it's madness. And you don't have to be a climate scientist to work that out. And you don't have to, when you look at how much methane is part of the atmosphere, when I realized that, it's only like 0.04% of the atmosphere and 4% of greenhouse gases, which are only 30% of the atmosphere. I was like exhausted. And when I think about, you can put in a test tube or in a lab the effect carbon dioxide or methane might have on warming. But when you put it in reality,
Behave
does
that
it
way.
have that effect? And I'm like, how can anybody prove that? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that's just hubris from a human point of view. And what I do want to say is I understand some of the damage that we as farmers or humans are doing to our ecosystems. And I'm all for doing better and tidying up where we are going wrong. I have no problem about that. I have no problem about trying to use less resources or use them more wisely. But to this whole notion of what they want us to achieve, if they were really serious, we'd be farming like the Amish. They are an amazing control group for this globe about a population that do things very different. But I know that's not realistic. But my point is, if you were serious about climate change and et cetera and ecosystems, then multiply what they're doing globally. But it's not about that. It's about control. It's about trying to disempower farmers, I guess. And because farmers are a real, we're real individuals. I think farmers are real thinkers, critical thinkers. And the more they have a say, the more damage it is to a certain narrative. I don't know, is that.
I completely agree with you, Hamish. You look at NEWA. Supposedly, they're going to be our climate change saviors, a government agency which spends nearly $200 million a year, and they don't have 80% of the biggest storms since the mid-1800s in their database, despite having existed for more than two decades. That's the sort of level of incompetence that I rail against. That's where I lost my faith in science, just like you. I completely lost it during the time of COVID. You went from trusting the science to suddenly asking, where is the science?
Spot on.
But what we worry about now is these mad scientists, if I can call them that, they are trying to destroy the industry that actually feeds them, killing the goose that laid the golden egg. That's what they are going to be doing right now. Because Don, you had some statistics, didn't you, that how much would it reduce? What are their current trials, the results they are giving?
Oh, I read this press statement from earlier this year that said that this is in terms of sheep genetics. Research flock 2638 has been developed over 3 decades from sheep representative of New Zealand's national flock to cumulatively enhance specific traits. And in 2021, the research team recorded a drop of over 2% in methane emissions from flock 2638 while continuing to improve performance in the other traits that are relevant to the industry, such as the quality of meat and wool. But then they went on to say the researchers estimate that incorporation of this low methane breeding trait into New Zealand's entire sheep flock would reduce methane by 0.5 to 1% annually, with ongoing reductions from further breeding. Now, Hamish has just talked to us earlier that it's 6 to 12%, did you say, was the sort of component that we're sort of working on. So if you take that 0.5 to 0.1 of that, it is almost like the effect of methane's warming on the planet, close to zero. And yet we've spent, I think in an article I read now, someone that's totted this up through the Pastoral Greenhouse Gas Consortium to AgriZero, to the Methane Pledges, to Global Research Alliances, and to the Centres for or Climate Excellence or whatever it is, we're heading towards $1 billion.
But nothing.
And the pot of gold is where? Well, you can see it ain't in the farm gate. And I always had this line, Hamish, the farmers are being farmed. And where is the biggest farm? It's in Wellington. And that's our problem. And I don't know, we've played this caper for as long as I can remember, but they've been outed. They've been outed by many, many rigorous science papers that say that the methane effect on warming for the world in a real and mixed atmosphere is so close to zero, it's not worth bothering about. And I would add to that, it's not even worth bothering about unless you want to be more efficient in your life. If methane escapes from a pipeline or from an underground undersea fissure, it's methane, and it's methane wherever it came from. And everything I'm reading now that's come into the light of into our gaze over the last 4 or 5 years shows that methane in a real and mixed atmosphere from any source can have virtually zero impact on warming. And yet, Hamish, it's no wonder you're cynical, because when you found this sort of stuff out as well, added into all your energy that you've put into your farming systems, you must wonder why, if there was a way to do the circuit breaker and stop feeding those people, you could get some sleep and be better off. Wouldn't that be true?
I mean, it's easily done. It's just like if all farmers just said no, it just, as Jamie McFadden says, it paralyzes the system. So that's the faith I have in farmers and in people in general going along with all this. I mean, there's 3 million open methane wells in America alone spewing methane into the atmosphere. And for me, that annoys me because it's just wasting energy. Let's be stewards of our resources and capture that, because New Zealand's going to need every single bit of natural gas in about 2 years' time. Otherwise, we're going to start burning more coal, because, you know, physics says that you need the energy to charge all your electric cars. So I don't know, I'm just trying to, you know, at the sheep genetics conference we had this week for beef and lamb, I asked, you could ask a question before time. That's just so they could screen them out and know how to answer. My question was, what percentage of farmers need to buy low methane rams to justify the investment in this political trait? And they never put the question up. And that's what infuriates me, is because all this has been done without discussion. Like, it's happening, it's locked and loaded, it's a freight train coming towards us. And then you have all the banks, and I notice on Facebook, you know, Rabobank posts their white paper on emissions to New Zealand. So everyone likes it, but nobody comments and nobody puts an angry face on there, because we're all in fear that they're going to target us as one of their clients and put the interest rates up. You know, God bless Methane Science Accord. They've done a great post on there, but everyone's silent. And you like them, you like the page, because you want to be seen to be involved with Rabo, because that's your bank or whatever, but you don't want to comment, because if you comment negatively, you get blasted by people who actually, you know, see through it all, and if you etc. But what I'm saying is, everything is shut down in discussion, and it's just the gravy train of money keeps people from asking questions about, is this worth it? And, you know, my wife Amy, she quit her wonderful corporate job because they try to pressurize her and you know, doing stuff with around the methane things within sheep genetics that she was not comfortable with. And she says, but, you know, this is not all the research, and I don't want to compromise what I believe is true. And this is happening in corporates, government. And so it's so strong and so powerful. I think farmers have a really, we're independent. So we've sort of got nothing to lose. And if in the end the banks do target me for speaking out and raising interest rates, well, then I guess, I don't know, you just go to the media and make a, you know, expose that as well. But it's just crazy.
Yeah, look, and so we're going to probably have to wind this up, but it's great to have your heartfelt comments, Hamish, because you're not alone. I can assure you, you're not alone. And there's a whole lot of things got to come into play before the reality check, as we love to use that term, comes to the sector. We have been let down by many players, and it is unacceptable that this pressure is now coming from over the top through our financing or from as supply companies. It doesn't have processes. It's just got a step too far. And, you know, the Danish farmers are in the gun now. We hope to build some sort of global alliance around how to stop this nonsense. Fill your boots on carbon dioxide emissions and trying to reduce that. But, you know, and that's a nonsense as well. But look, we've got one caper to fix, and this is this methane madness. And so, look, great to have you on RCR Greenwash this morning. Clearly, we need a whole lot more from people like Hamish Belskis. And let's hope this generates a lot more interest. I hope it does, and we'll get back to you soon.
Well, just one last thing. You know, often I'll say to people, come and throw stones at me and every other farmer once you've grown your own food and harnessed your own energy.
Yep.
Because it's so easy to point the finger at farmers until you understand how hard it is to milk cows, farm sheep, grow vegetables. Everything is really, really hard. Yep. And that's what probably frustrates me the most is the high horses that look down upon us and tell us that we must do this for the sake of the planet. I'm like, out of the cities, and which are probably the biggest feedlots around, and then they come up with the, oh, well, if New Zealand doesn't keep ahead of the curve, we'll end up getting shut out with our trade partners. And I'm like, so here they are overseas, grain feeding all their dairy cows and their livestock, huge amounts of fossil energy to do that in confined areas, feedlots, and then they capture the methane, and then it's obviously burned off into CTO once it's actually used. But we're using that excuse as they're getting more efficient than us. I'm like, until other countries farm their animals outside, free range, on pasture, converting solar energy into the superfood we do, no one will beat us in terms of energy efficiency. And that's what all I want to end on today. And just thank you guys for constantly standing up for us farmers and for people of New Zealand against the madness and the groupthink and the narrative that will eventually I don't know, either destroy us or we wake up and realize that.
Right back at you, Hamish. Thank you so much. You put that very clearly. We'll be back to chat another time.
No, been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.